Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind,
Federal Court of Appeals judges give local election clerks 6 more days until November 9 to count an expected 1 million absentee ballots. But Republicans say their appeal of that order could reach the U.S. Supreme Court. A judge will be asked next week to block Governor Tony Evers' new order that requires face masks indoors until November 21. State officials warn of a growing health care crisis as the numbers of COVID hospitalizations and deaths set records. Joe Biden, Libertarian Party presidential candidate Joe Jorgensen, and Eric Trump appeal to Wisconsin voters in Voices from the Campaign Trail. Rewind, your week in review for October 2.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
J.R., let's first talk about the latest federal court ruling. You know, I'm going to use my fingers. First of all, we had one judge, William Conley, extending, given a 6-day extension to count absentee ballots. That was appealed to 3 federal court judges who upheld the 6-day extension. Now the Republicans say they want a full 7-judge Court of Appeals hearing to rule on the 3-judge ruling. And now the Republicans say they may take it to the 9-member Supreme Court. How am I doing, JR? Am I close?
You also missed the filing yesterday with the 7-member state Supreme Court, in which the Republicans have now asked for the justices to basically clarify what they meant in a ruling. Yes. And here's the heart of this whole thing, okay? It's called standing. Whether you basically have suffered an injury or have been impacted by something and therefore have standing to sue. The 7th Circuit Court of Appeals, as 3-judge panel, said Republican lawmakers do not have standing to challenge the decision extending the deadline. In doing so, the federal court relied in part on a state Supreme Court decision. That state Supreme Court decision just happened to uphold much of the lame duck laws Republicans approved in 2018, which included a provision essentially giving Republican lawmakers the opportunity to represent the state in court when the statute's been challenged. But the federal court interpreted it in such a way, saying, in a case like this, Republicans, you don't have standing. Now, this is the in the weeds, but the interesting legal stuff. The lawyer for Republican lawmakers basically said, hey, court, you got it wrong. And we think you should go ask the state Supreme Court for clarification. Now, we are not lawyers, Steve, never been a judge, nor will I ever be, but I've heard judges don't like being told by lawyers, you're wrong. So I don't get the impression that that request to ask the state Supreme Court for clarification was received very warmly. However, the lawyer for Republicans has asked, again, for the full court to hear this case, and they've agreed at least to hear arguments about that, and we get a decision any minute now. And two, Republicans in this filing with the state Supreme Court says, hey, we're asking you to offer a clear declaration that Republicans have, lawmakers, have standing to sue when you have a case involving a law being challenged in which the executive branch, i.e. Democratic Attorney General Josh Call, is not defending that law. Now, I haven't lost you yet, great at home, but basically we have this kind of interplay between the state and federal courts about a key issue that could determine when you are have to have your absentee ballot back for the November election.
Okay. Okay. You kind of made my head explode. The takeaways. As of now, JR, the 3-judge federal panel ruling giving a 6-day extension to count absentee ballots is still in effect, but it's been appealed to the full 7 judges on the Court of Appeals. Meanwhile, you have this action, this appeal to the state Supreme Court. So we're awaiting on 2 things: a decision by the state Supreme Court on whether to get involved, and a ruling by the full seven judges on the Court of Appeals, correct?
Yes, but I think it's 11 members in the 7th Circuit. And what's interesting there is that the president's nominee to the state Supreme or U.S. Supreme Court is a member of the 7th Circuit. So I don't know if she is going to hear this case. Because if you think about it, if she hears the case and then she is confirmed, it could come to her back at the U.S. Supreme Court level. So it's fascinating. And then, oh, by the way, the three judges on that panel are all GOP appointees, including one for President Trump. So it's not like you had a Democratic, certain Democratic appointees ruling against Republicans. You had Republican judges saying, I don't think so. So I don't know what this means. All I know is that we also have this narrowing window where the U.S. Supreme Court said it doesn't like seeing changes to state election laws close to an election. Well, here we are, what, a month and a day away from the November election, and we're talking about when will your ballot be due? It's a fascinating situation.
And also, so, as Megan Wolf, the election administrator, said yesterday, your notes in mind from what she said, also at stake is the deadline to register to vote, because the first judge, Mr. Conley, extended that from October 14th through 21st. But Ms. Wolf said, because of all the appeals and all these tangential legal issues, please hold to that deadline of October 14th. Let me just read one line from Mr. Conley, the first judge to rule. None of the appellants has suffered an injury to its own interest, and Republican legislators are not entitled to represent Wisconsin's interest as a polity. So, JR, any moment we could get a state Supreme Court ruling on that issue, and the full, whether it's 7 or 11 judges, ruling from the full Court of Appeals, correct?
Yeah, and don't forget, we've got cases over whether Madison's Democracy in the Park is legal. We have a hearing about that. There have been warning letters fired off from the Republicans' attorney about whether we should have mascots and professional athletes at Miller Park. Well, it's going to be American Family Park, but for now, Miller Park. Right. And Pfizer Forum in Milwaukee, when they have early voting there later this month. I should have gone to law school, Steve. All the briefs that I've been reading lately.
Well, all this makes
our head hurts, but we're going to try to sort it out on next week's rewind as we get some of these decisions. Okay, next topic. Monday, in a court in Western Wisconsin, the judge will be asked to overturn the governor's second order requiring masks to be worn statewide. Now, the governor issued this order declaring a public health emergency. It would apply to November 21, but the Wisconsin but the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty has asked for an injunction blocking that second Evers orders. Institute for Law and Liberty argues that the governor needs the legislature's okay to extend emergency powers beyond 60-day window in state law for health emergency. And the spokeswoman for the governor said, while Republicans ignore the alarming case increases we are seeing across our state, Governor Evers will continue doing everything he can to prevent the spread of COVID-19 in Wisconsin. So, JR, is this a parallel to the, even though this is being heard at the circuit court level, is this a parallel, could be another stay-at-home precedent that could reach this state Supreme Court?
It could. What's interesting to me is that, remember, when Will first filed his lawsuit, it did not ask for a restraining order. The governor issuing the second mask mandate upped the ante in some ways. And so Will responded with this motion, because the concern that I've heard is that if you don't challenge the governor on this, he could issue more orders in perpetuity and keep the mask in place. Now, the governor, politically speaking, is on higher ground than people challenge the mask, because the mandate is popular. Obviously, the people who don't like it really, really don't like it. And I've heard arguments of, does it work? Do masks work because we have cases spiking and all these kind of arguments against it? But polls show people like it. I get the impression that Will would prefer to see the legislature step in and do its constitutional responsibility and take a vote on this if they don't like it. But they've lessened the courts because they don't want to take that politically unpopular vote a month out from election. So now it's about the court. And before, this is going to be a court, curious way we go, a circuit court, appeals court, Supreme Court, and talk about the principle, the constitutional law behind what the governor's powers are in a health crisis. Now, however, the focus is going to turn to the mask and whether he can do this mask mandate. It kind of changes the entire dynamic of this case and places the focus in a place where they really don't want. They want to talk about the principle. Now it's about the practice of the mask mandate.
Right. And Will filed this suit against the mask edict in Polk County Circuit Court, but two Polk County Circuit Court judges withdrew, so it'll be heard from another judge, at least at the circuit court level in Western Wisconsin. But I think that's a big story, whether the governor enjoins the mask order immediately. That would be immediately appealed. But anyway, I think that's a big issue for next week. Right, JR? Big deal?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, think about the governor. His response has been repeatedly since May that I would do more, but Republicans have hemmed me in because of Supreme Court decision. Now you have a case where he did something else and it's being challenged, and he keeps placing the blame on them for not doing enough. And then you get this back and forth of, well, you didn't work with us. Well, you should have done this. And so it's, but either way, the bottom line is that Wisconsin, we have a problem. We have cases spiking. Hospitalizations are up. The hospitals in Green Bay say they're at capacity, not over capacity right now. We have a problem. And we aren't seeing a solution from state government beyond what the governor's office mask mandate.
And you and I are seeing increasing number of press releases from Democratic candidates blaming Republicans for a lack of action on the COVID-19 crisis. And so that could emerge as a campaign issue. And let me just say what we heard the governor say yesterday in terms of the legislature. Quote, Republicans, quote, haven't been in session for a long time. But anyway, now let's turn to the growing severity of the crisis of COVID-19, because we heard from the governor, DHS Secretary Palm, and the chief medical officer, Dr. Ryan Westergaard, the ante, because of the surge, the new numbers have grown up, exploded, just surged in Wisconsin. So before we walk through those numbers, let's hear from the governor, Andrea Palm, Ryan Westergaard, please.
I am concerned about the alarming trends of COVID-19 we're seeing across our state. Just yesterday, we hit a grim milestone with 27 new deaths reported. Kathy and I are thinking about the family members and friends of all those who have lost someone to this virus. This is a grave, stark reminder for all of us in our state that COVID-19 isn't over. Our fight against this virus continues, and we know that now it's going to be harder than ever.
Our total deaths have now reached 1,348. As you know, yesterday we added 27 people, our highest single day to date, to the list of neighbors and friends we've lost, and today we added 21 more. This is what we're facing here in Wisconsin. COVID-19 is a highly infectious disease, and it is spreading in our state. It is stretching our hospital capacity, and it is overwhelming our public health infrastructure. We must take action.
We're setting records now at a point which is the beginning of respiratory virus season. The likelihood that this is going to get much worse before it gets better is a real one. And if we do nothing differently, I would say it's a high likelihood that this is going to get much worse before it gets better. This virus is highly transmissible. It spreads from person to person very effectively. And when it gets into a person who is vulnerable to severe infection, it can cause severe illness, hospitalization, and death. We can expect more of that to happen unless we do things to flatten the curve. And I fear that the case numbers and the death numbers are going to get higher unless we do that relatively urgently.
Now, those official statements from the governor and Secretary Palm and Dr. Westergaard lay the groundwork for now. Now let's look at the actual numbers, because they're scary. This week, the 7-day average of positives was 2,405, three times the total from September 1. The record 27 deaths that you heard the governor talk about were reported Thursday. Record 2,887 positives reported on, Thursday. Yes, excuse me. Secretary Palm says we are fast approaching where we may have to use the alternative care facility that was under construction at State Fair Park because of the emergency demands on our healthcare systems, especially in Southeast Wisconsin. And the governor yesterday issued an order allowing out-of-state healthcare professionals and healthcare professionals whose licenses recently lapsed to practice in the state. JR, your take on the new numbers and what it may and the political fallout in the Capitol?
Well, you know, it's a lot of unknown right now. I mean, one, who is going to get blamed for this? The governor obviously has been trying to place the blame on Republican lawmakers, saying, "Where's your plan? Why have you done anything?" Republicans have fired back. The governor hasn't worked with them. I've seen a health official say that there is a problem because we have basically fatigue in Wisconsin, fatigue about wearing masks, fatigue about the social distance requirements because they've been, they first started dealing this, in mid-March with orders about the governor's stay-at-home order, that there's just a fatigue about it, that people aren't paying attention to it. And I talked to lawmakers who tell me that if you go in to Madison, for example, and then go someplace more rural, Wisconsin, it's like a different world in terms of like people using masks versus not using masks, because there's just people, a sense of less of a threat in rural areas that, oh, that's a problem in Madison or Milwaukee or Green Bay. And you look at the map and the cases are spiking around the state. There are maybe a dozen counties that aren't like shaded some color for problematic rises in cases right now. And I don't know the political fallout. And then you got to add in the president now testing positive. What does that do for this entire dynamic? Is it a wake-up call for some people? If he recovers quickly, do people say, oh, look, even he got it and it wasn't a big deal? I really don't know. And I think we're in uncharted territory to have something like this going on, a month out from the election.
Well, and Secretary Palm yesterday just said, we have added a new category to Wisconsin counties. We've added a very high designation for COVID cases, and 45 of our 72 counties are now in that category. So this is just an unfortunate crisis that nobody in Wisconsin really thought we'd be leading the nation here a month ago. So, we've got to keep watching the numbers and how they play out, and we'll, of course, be doing that. Just a PSJR. Yesterday, a Waukesha County judge told the Evers administration, you may not. He blocked the Evers administration plans to release the names of businesses who had two or more employees test positive. Now, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce had sued the Evers administration trying to block the release of these business names. But you and I yesterday heard the governor say, look, we got the request for these names under the open records law. We explored it. We considered it a valid open records request. So we intend to release the names. But then the Waukesha County judge blocked that. How big a deal is this Waukesha County case, JR?
Well, we'll see. Remember, this has been percolating for like a month, 6 weeks. The governor first got asked about this sometime in late summer about whether they're going to release the names. And at the time, it kind of got pushed aside. Then what he's saying is that his lawyers looked at this open records request and decided they couldn't withhold the information. Now, remember, Evers has gotten some grief about his compliance with open records law, which his office feels unfair that they've done everything that Governor Scott Walker did. Same time, the criticism has been, well, you promised me this really open administration and you haven't necessarily met that standard. Either way, the governor is squeezed because you have the open records law that he wants to adhere to. You also have business saying, hey, look, if you do this, it's going to be problematic for us because it's like a digital scarlet letter on our business that don't come here, don't patronize this business because they've had some COVID cases.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, let's turn to two election law challenges heard by the Supreme Court. JR, you're so much more into this case than I am. So talk about the first case, the most important case involving 130,000 names. Walk us through that and the arguments. Well, we'll hear some of those arguments, but summarize the case because it's a big deal. Even though they may not issue a ruling on up to 130,000 names on our statewide voter list by November 3. Please walk us through this case.
Now, the background is that the State Elections Commission does clean up essentially the voter rolls every so often. It sends a postcard to people who may have moved to say, hey, do you still live here? If the postcard comes back, great. If it doesn't, then they're supposed to look at ways to pull them off the rolls and make sure we don't have people who are registered the wrong address. Back last year, the commission sent out the postcards, had somebody come back and said, okay, when should we do this cleanup? And the decision was, we'll do it later, essentially, okay, after the election. Wisconsin's for Law and Liberty say, no, you have to do this now. And went to Ozaukee County Court, got an order from that judge to print the rolls now. The commission deadlocked 3-3 about doing that, said, we can't agree on whether to do this right now. It's only a circuit court judge's decision. We'll wait for more. That circuit court judge issued a contempt order, the members of the commission that wouldn't follow with his order. The state Supreme Court's asked to take the case directly, deadlocked, said we can't agree about taking this, so went to the appeals court first. Now it's back, and the question, the heart of this is, when does the commission have to clean up the rolls about people who may have moved? You know, because remember, there are false positives, I guess you could call them, where people who identified as possibly having moving hadn't moved and could get pulled off the rolls. Now, there's this back and forth about, hey, in Wisconsin, we have these safeguards, such as you can register at the polls up to election day. However, if you don't bring what you need to register the polls on election day, it causes you a problem, right? It's all playing out against backdrop of possibly us being a tipping point. And yes, to your point, I don't know when the court's going to rule, but Justice Rebecca Bradley, a conservative, when the court first deadlocked whether to take the appeal, said, if we don't take it now, essentially, it's not going to happen until after the November election. So I feel fairly confident we're not going to see a decision prior to November 3rd.
Okay, but JR, they also...
I heard a second case. Could you describe that quickly? Because the... do I have this right? The Republican Party asked for a precise definition of who can request absentee ballots without a photo ID. Is that a Dane County? Did that come out of Dane County?
So essentially, during the kind of the initial days of the pandemic back in March, the Dane County clerk had posted on social media advice about being indefinitely confined. Essentially, if you meet that qualification, Wisconsin law, you are exempt from certain standards of vote absentee, such as a voter ID requirement. And the advice kind of suggested if you're afraid about COVID or being exposed, you can qualify and not have to show your ID. That was basically pulled back. But we're still having the kind of the discussion about what do you have to tell people? What is the standard for that? And again, I don't know if the court will rule before November 3rd, but people are already casting absentee ballots as we speak. So it's not going to impact them, it doesn't look like.
Right, I understand.
So, but now the you're about to hear from Chief Justice Rogan Zach, Rick Essenberg of Will, Attorney General Josh Call, arguing about the first case that JR just outlined, whether the Election Commission should be ordered to remove up to 130,000 names of alleged movers. Please.
What is WEC's obligation under Wisconsin law?
Maintenance is separate from making changes to the system. Maintenance means doing things to make sure that the system is kept up and that there is a uniform list. And that is what we have in Wisconsin. Local officials enter information into the statewide voter list. That list is kept by the Election Commission. And then decisions about whether a voter is registered or whether a voter needs to be deactivated, those happen at the local level. But that's separate from maintaining the list. That's making revisions to the list.
General Call suggests that HAVA simply wants us to have a uniform and non-discriminatory list. I would respectfully point out that the obligation under HAVA is quite broader than that, that each state acting through the state election official, the chief state election official, shall implement in a uniform and non-discriminatory manner a single uniform official centralized, interactive, computerized statewide voter registration list defined, maintained, and administered at the state level. It is simply no longer open to the state of Wisconsin to have a decentralized, localized system that will be used in federal elections.
Just want to make sure I understand your argument. Your argument is that the statutory scheme that allows municipalities to make changes is unlawful under federal law, is that municipalities cannot make changes apart from permission from the Wisconsin Elections Commission. I just want to make sure I'm understanding your argument.
I wouldn't go so far as to say that they can't make changes, but the changes have to be made under the direction, control, or supervision of the Wisconsin Election Commission in this case.
Our final topic before we get to JR's stock picks is something we started last week. It's called Battleground Wisconsin, Voices from the Campaign Trail. We offer you unedited comments from Joe Jorgensen, the Libertarian candidate for president, and just a footnote, the Gary Johnson, the 2016 candidate, Libertarian candidate for president, got 107,000 votes in 2016, and other voices from the campaign trail, Jill Biden and Eric Trump. Please.
Given the challenges we face as a country, it's easy to feel like the change I'm talking about just can't happen. But I believe it can because I believe in you. because I see America through my grandmother's eyes, a place where the rights of the individual are greater than the power of government, a place where liberty means minimum government and maximum freedom. As I ask for your vote this November, it's not because I'm asking you to cast a vote for me. Instead, I think that you should vote for you. You know best how your money should be spent. You know best how to prioritize the needs of your family. You know best what's best for you. Thank you so very much.
Right now, we don't have to just watch what happens. We have to decide what happens. And when we elect Joe and Kamala, they will help bring us back together and heal our fractured communities. And with their steady leadership, steady, not chaos like we have now, we can change the course of our future. This is our moment. This is our election. This is our nation. And we will get to choose our future together.
It's why we're going to win. And I'm telling you, the enthusiasm is better than ever before. And that silent majority is not so silent anymore. They're not so silent. People don't want to see chaos. People don't want to see the lack of law and order. People don't want to see more taxes. And people don't want this country to have socialized medicine. They don't want it. People want secure borders. People want secure borders. They want a border wall. And they don't want people who have been in government for 47 years. And guys, that's why we're going to win. I promise you. I promise you we're going to win the state again. And guys, I promise you my father will never, ever let you down. So God bless all of you. God bless the United States of America. Keep doing what you're doing. We love you guys, and we really appreciate all of you. We really appreciate all of you. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Stockpicker, Rising.
So Rising Medicaid Fund got a new update from DHS this week. They're now on track to have a surplus of $289 million. That's more than three times as much as it was in the June update. Now, caveat there, of that money, $120 million is going to be because the federal government has extended like emergency funding for Medicaid, essentially. Well, recall last week, Steve, that DOA said, hey, we're asking agencies to lapse money back to general fund to help us have a cushion in case things go south. DHS's request includes $120 million from Medicaid. So they're basically taking that federal dollars and moving it back to general fund to help the state's bottom line. So, you know, the Medicaid fund's in good shape. Also, enrollment has not gone up as much as you thought it might. So that helps with the projection. But I think the key piece, remember, there is that federal money is driving it, and we're going to skim basically that money off of that fund to help the state's bottom line.
Next.
Campaign stop. So if you had on your bingo card for 2020, President Trump gets COVID and has to cancel two Wisconsin rallies, your car was better than mine. This was kind of a shock, right?
Yes.
And here's what's interesting is even before this all happened late last night, early this morning, you saw two different approaches to campaigning for the Biden campaign and the Trump campaign. You had Jill Biden go into Madison and Waukesha this week, small events, socially distanced, not big rallies. You had the president coming into Regina La Crosse and Green Bay, happened to be two of our hot spots in Wisconsin, open air, I have to stress, rallies. But still, people gathering, likely not masked up because of what we've seen so far. Also, you've seen two different approaches to campaigning in general. The president's campaign has been on the doors, you know, dropping lit, talking to people, which is a staple of Wisconsin politics. It's how you reach voters beyond just calling them, emailing them, texting them, et cetera. The Biden campaign is refrained from doing that so far. So Democrats in general. I mean, there are some assembly candidates I've seen on doors. But for the most part, Dems are not hitting doors and talking to people one-on-one. And part of that is COVID. Well, it's all about COVID. Democrats feel like it's hard to send a message of be safe, but I'm going to come to your doorstep and knock on your door when you don't know me. Republicans know that their voters are more in rural areas. They have a little bit less of a worry about COVID-19. It's an easier pitch for them to go out. And they're taking precautions too. But this week just shows you that difference in approach. And the question I have is, what now? Like, what does a president do when he feeds off the energy of these rallies and they're waiting for him to drive messages to people in key states? Is he off the trail for 2 weeks, 10 days, 2 weeks? Like, what's this going to mean? And what happens when he is back on the campaign trail? Do you see a change? It's throwing everything up in the air in a state that we have huge stakes, and we could be the tipping point in the presidential election.
Yeah, you got 30 seconds for falling. Go.
So real quick, municipal budgets. There's a study out this week that showed for municipalities that have state facilities in their backyard, the state is paying less now than it has ever before to care for the services of take care of those buildings. That's a hit. But the bigger picture is municipalities have to worry about what's the state going to give them this coming fiscal year because we've got COVID issue. Their costs for COVID, right, because they're new expenses. They've lost revenue for parking, for all kinds of stuff because we've been at standstill for a while. Things are kind of starting to pick back up, but we're still not where we were for a normal economy. What's that going to mean for their budgets? And also, some people are having a hard time paying the property taxes this year, right? There could be delays in that. There's all kinds of uncertainty for municipalities right now with their budgets.
Right. Okay. And just a programming note, because of the COVID restrictions, more and more candidates for Congress and the legislature are sitting down with Wisconsin Eye for interviews that are the wiseye.org website. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for October 2.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.